This is a reading from chapter 17 of Henry David Thoreau's Walden. I wish to speak a word for nature, for absolute freedom and wildness, and not a freedom and a culture that is merely civil. I wish to regard us as inhabitants of nature and not merely as members of society. I wish to make an extreme statement so that I may make an emphatic one. For there are enough champions of civilization. The minister and the school committee will see to that. And here is my extreme statement. In wildness is the preservation of the world. In wildness is the preservation of the world. From the forest, from the wilderness, from the great oceans of the world, come the tonics which brace humankind. We need the tonic of wildness. We need to wade sometimes in the marshes where the bittern and the meadow hen lurk. We need to smell the whispering sedge where some wild fowl builds her nest. At the same time that we are earnest to learn and to explore all things, we paradoxically require that all things remain mysterious, unsurveyed, and unfathomed. Because ultimately, they are unfathomable. We can never have enough wild nature. The seacoast with its wrecks, the wilderness with its living and decaying trees, the thundercloud, and the rain which lasts 3 weeks and produces fantastic floods. We need to witness our limits transgressed and some life pasturing freely where we hardly ever wander. In those moments when we confront the wild, when we confront the raw material of life, in those moments we will begin to realize who and where we are, and most importantly, we will begin to realize the infinite extent of our relations. I love that passage from Henry David Thoreau's Walden, particularly the line, "We need the tonic of wildness." Thoreau wrote those words more than 150 years ago in nearby Concord, Massachusetts, because he felt civilization encroaching upon what was most essential in his life. Now, in 2018, I believe we need the wisdom of his message more than ever. At the outset, let me just say that there's not a lot of wildness in my life. For the past 15 years, I've lived across the causeway in Newcastle, a place you might describe as quaint and even charming, but wild, not so much. Our neighborhood is, by any measure, thickly settled. And as I take the dog for his daily constitutionals, we pass house after house after house. We often linger, though, in front of the one remaining undeveloped lot. It is fairly modest in size, a mixture of oak, ledge, and a few evergreens. As far as I know, only some squirrels call it home. Nothing extraordinary, but for the fact of its wildness, which calls to me, stirs my imagination, and feeds something essential. As I stand before it, I feel something tight within loosen, almost as though my spirit were stretching. Lives can be like neighborhoods, filled with plans and structure, with little or no wild space in them, with no room for the creative impulse to be born. Over time, my own life has grown increasingly structured. In my 35 years of work as a teacher of young children, the pendulum, however much I may resist, has swung steadily toward less play and more structure. Likewise, on the home front, evenings are spent chauffeuring my son to a growing list of structured after-school activities, slogging through homework and managing the daily demands of food, dishes, and laundry. I've yet to mention the 24-hour information stream that floods our collective consciousness, but perhaps that's a whole other sermon. If I try to think of a wild place in my life, I need to travel back in time to childhood summers spent at a cottage my family owned on Point Breeze by the shores of a lake with a very long name, Chagagagog, Manchagagog, Chibunagungamog. We would awake on those endless July and August days in our apartment in town. I remember feeling imprisoned by the boredom, heat, and humidity, until my mother, the benevolent jailer, packed baskets with food, bathing suits, and towels, and freed us, my sister, myself, and our dog, with the words, "Time to go to the lake." We needed those towels, first of all, to protect our legs from the sun-baked backseat vinyl of our 66 Dodge Dart. After 10 minutes of driving, first past stores and then houses and yards, we turned down a wooded road and civilization seemed to vanish. With the windows down, you could feel the change in the air and begin to smell the water beyond the trees. The dog, who true to her kind, loved to ride with her head out the window, would begin to whine in anticipatory joy. She hung out of the car so far that we were assigned the task of holding her hind legs while her tail kept time with her racing heart. Soon, but never soon enough, we turned off the main road onto an unpaved, unnamed lane, which we dubbed the Bumpy Road. We were nothing if not original. And at last, pulled off beside a stairway with a white wooden rail that led down a long slope of mountain laurel to the two-room yellow cottage that my grandfather and uncles had built by the shore. In my memory, no matter how hot it had been in town, there was always a breeze. Our days were filled with aunts, cousins, boats, islands, inner tubes, walks through the woods, sweet corn, birch beer, crawfish, snails, and of course, the lake. I can still see us bobbing in that soft water, often after dark, or in the rain, or right after an electrical storm, to marvel at how the lightning warmed things up. Evenings, if we were lucky, meant neighbors stopping by to sit on the big screened porch and sing the old songs, smile a while, let the rest of the world go by, and heart of my heart. When my time comes, if there is such a place as heaven, I hope to find myself at the top of that stairway, hearing those sweet voices drift up on the night air. If it all sounds too good to be true, I can only say that these are my memories. There were, of course, tensions, Anyone who's heard me speak of my mother and her sisters would know that there were tensions. But they were not the essence of our time there. What shines through instead is a sense of intimate contact with the natural world and with each other, which continues to capture my imagination and be a source of creativity all these years later. A cousin who shared that time wrote of it and said, "Each summer day, we rode the magic carpet of imagination. A short hike to get water from a neighbor's spigot became a grand adventure. And climbing the stairs each night to the garbage pail never lost its thrill. It was, for me, a wild green place and a sacred time. A time when we unknowingly followed Thoreau's advice to wade in the marshes, smell the whispering sedge, and drink of the tonic of wildness." What is lost when we are cut off from wildness? Nothing less, I believe, than our souls, our essence, our creativity, the place where the divine and human meat. In his book on creativity, theologian and Episcopal priest Matthew Fox writes of wildness as the wellspring of creativity, out of which flows our ability to obtain food, to find shelter, to bring forth young, to sing, to dance, to fly through the air and swim through the depths of the sea. The same inner tendency that evokes the insight of the poet, the skill of the artist, the power of the shaman. Nature, he says, is wild. We come from the wild, from the surging seas, from the heat-blasting, hydrogen-exploding sun, from galaxies expanding. We are made of wild stuff. Carbon, oxygen, sulfur, magnesium, we are very, very combustible. In our universe, which scientists now believe is made of 2 trillion galaxies, I want to pause for a moment to honor that wild thought. In our universe of 2 trillion galaxies, a star is born every 15 seconds. Our universe is constantly creating and unfolding, and we, who are part of it, are called to do the same. It is who we are as a species. Matthew Fox argues quite convincingly that we need to rediscover our connection to wildness, and through it, our creativity, both to grow as individuals and to solve together the challenges that face our collective future. How do we begin? I'm not sure I have the answers. As I alluded to earlier, I'm hardly the poster child for wildness. And like many of us, I can be easily seduced by the safety and comfort of structure and sameness, all the while knowing that too much of it will rob me of my essence. Here it may be helpful to return to the example of Henry David Thoreau, who responded to a sense of separation from his soul by embracing the wild and jumping in. In his words, "I went to the woods because I wished to live deliberately, to front only the essential facts of life, and see if I could not learn what it had to teach, and not, when I came to die, discover that I had not lived." We cannot all take to the woods for 2 years, 2 months, and 2 days, as did Thoreau. But perhaps we can, as writer Elizabeth Wetherill recommends, retire to a lonely spot, even if only in imagination, to ponder the world and our place in it. Thoreau wrote Walden not to get others to do exactly as he had done. He wrote it to show the importance of following our hearts and to remind us of the importance of wildness in our search for meaning. Where is our Walden? Perhaps it is in some yet-to-be-developed corner of our neighborhood. Perhaps it is to be found in the awesome power of the sea. Perhaps it is a place we visit only in memory or imagination. Perhaps, like John Muir, we will run outside to hear snowflakes. Or like Mary Oliver, respond to the call of the wild geese. Or perhaps, when we are ready, we will find it in silence. Wherever your wild place is, I invite you to go there and see what is born. It is, I believe, our way forward. I mentioned earlier that I had taught for 35 years. In 7 weeks' time, I will retire from the profession and come face to face with the wild unknown. When they learn of the upcoming change, people tend to ask one question. What are you going to do? I tell them that I have a plan. On day one, I will travel back to the lake with the very long name, put my feet in the soft waters of that wild green place, and see what is born. May we all drink of the tonic of wildness. May it be so.